listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 73 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dio Morales, and today I'm joined by "Your upgrades can deceive you, don't trust them," William Hagwood.
Every list I build has four ships in it.
And Chris, he doesn't know anything about 2.0 Brown, and that's why we had him on the show.
They keep asking me questions, and I keep trying.
So today, the entire show is about second edition list building. We are in an exploratory phase. I want to tell you to listeners and viewers in the future, nothing that we say is perfect. We're just, I don't want to say that we're pulling it out of our butt, but we kind of are. Like, it's we're exploring. We're going to try to find some good ideas from some patron requests. We put out a post on Patreon and said, hey, what are some ships or pilots that you'd like us to kind of build some lists around? Or maybe not even an entire list, but maybe a build for that ship, so on and so forth. So that is what we decided to do. So before we go too far, let's talk about some of our upcoming live streams. We got August 31st, the United States National Championship, streamed by Gold Squadron Podcast. We are now the official stream of the Nova Open for X-Wing. So nice. That's super fun. And yes, this year is first edition, but in the future, we will, of course, have second edition. So that's going to be super fun. And give me 1 second, beautiful people, because I'm hearing some rings in the background.
It's Andrew.
It's Andrew.
Andrew wants to join.
Tell him to jump in.
You need to mute your Facebook.
I just did.
I don't know if you want to mention it while you're doing the Nationals. I didn't realize it was 1.0 only.
Yes.
I imagine they'll have 2.0 side events, just like Gen Con. But I thought Gen Con was the end of it. I thought we were done.
No, we're not.
But there's more.
There's more. You're not free.
Oh, I'm free. Like, I'm not going to Nationals. And I saw that somebody just posted online that the prize card is a 1.0 only card, which made some people sad.
The templates are cool, though. Those are backwards compatible.
Yeah, and rumor has it there will be plenty of 2.0 swag to be had. So.
Oh, yeah. They have to. They're like, please don't abandon. I mean, like, a lot of people already signed up for the event. They have to have something to entice you to bring you in.
Right, because even store championships was difficult for people to like, convince themselves to go. I know I went to one thinking, you know, all I need to do is get to top four. That's all the prizes I really care about. Getting a first round bye would be sweet, which I ended up doing. But I walked into it just not caring really that much.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. Make sure you watch live. And then the other thing that's happening at the Nova Open, now this won't be streamed because they're hiring a production company to take care of this part, which is super cool. But I'm going to be moderating a panel at the Nova Open all about X-Wing 2nd Edition, and on the one of the panelists will be Alex Davey, one of the co-designers for X-Wing 2nd Edition. So I've been tasked, and I said, Dion, we want you to write up some questions and things like that, and I have some ideas of some of the topics I want to cover, but community, you guys know that, you know, I do all this for you guys, so what are some things that you would like me to talk about at this panel with the developers and some of the players who will be there, all about second edition. I'm super excited about it. And of course, I'm going to have a recorder there with me, a sound recorder. So we'll get the audio on the podcast and we'll be able to talk about it. But yeah, I'm super excited for that. Make sure to post that either on Facebook or Patreon or message it to me. I don't put it in this chat because I won't have access to it later. So super excited about that. Now, we got to talk about the Gold Squadron Classic because it's coming. Okay, September 22nd, registration is open. Come now. And we got in the design for the templates. And they look super sweet. It's a design that I made and that was brought to life I would say actually just fixed essentially by Andrew Knuckles, who will be popping in at some moment.
I am here now.
Whoa. It's a miracle. You just speak his name and he comes.
That's what I do. I'm basically like the genie in the bottle.
Yeah. Thanks for fixing up that design for me, man.
Oh, no problem. I mean, it was a good base to start with. So you did a lot of my work for me.
All right. I'm not totally super bad. That helps. So yeah, we'll be giving those awesome templates out to the top 8 for the Gold Squadron Classic, and super excited. And I want to talk about a raffle that we're going to do, because I like enticing people to do things by giving away swag. We talked about it last week. We have copies, a couple copies. We have 4 total. I'll show them all right here on camera. 4 copies of the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Lando alt art. Okay, this is going to be, in my opinion, one of the rarest alt arts to get, because it was only given out at Comic-Con, and if you didn't get it at Comic-Con, everything else is, you're not going to get it again. So everybody who signs up for the Gold Squadron Classic from today till next Tuesday will be entered in a raffle for this Lando card. This one I'm holding in my hand right here will be yours. So that'll be super fun. And that includes anybody who signed up this morning. I don't want anybody to be super salty. Like, I signed up before the cast. So starting from today. And then we're going to be doing a raffle for the second Lando card for people who signed up previous. So that's everybody's taken care of there. And let's get into our main topic here. We're talking about squad building. Okay, squad building, and I want to start our discussion, and we'll go around the horn here. I want to talk about when we built lists in first edition, what were some of the habits that we had? What were we trying to do and optimize in lists when we were building in first edition? Andrew, you just jumped in. What are some of your thoughts on that?
So I guess if we're going to just go on, I'll say like generic, kind of every play style things. Whenever I immediately start building a list, I obviously try and I pick the ship that I want to be, I'll say, like the mainstay of the list. And then I go from that point into, all right, how much action efficiency can I give this ship to where it can get as many actions per turn as I can possibly generate? Whether that be just some like 1 or 2 rerolls here and there, or some free focus actions, or that kind of stuff. And that's going to carry over quite well over to second edition, especially with them dialing back a lot of the efficiency that we're kind of used to seeing for top tier lists. So I'm, trying to looking through all the cards, and I'm still learning all the syntax and trying to parse through all the mountains of information in second edition. Trying to figure out where those little action loopholes kind of exist.
Will?
In addition to, I would say like defensive modifiers, because I think they're the most important thing. If you can get them on your ship, I was always going for debuffs, which are coming pretty slim in second edition. Like trying to get like 2 synergies to work together. Like I was running, stress tactician and R3A2, and getting those kind of synergies is what basically the mainstay of all of the list I was making in first edition.
And Chris.
Yeah, so the way that I went into list building, which I don't think is going to be really helpful going into second edition, at least to start, is that I would kind of look at the meta and what exists and try to look for a ship that I knew I was good at and I could pack enough points onto to win in the end game. And so things like, Miranda, how many points does Miranda end up with? Kylo, how many points can you get that up to? And then stacking stuff around that of how can I either eliminate my opponent's ship to make my end game positive, or just make sure my ship gets to the end game and I can do something with it. Now that's going to be really difficult to do going into second edition, because one, I don't see a lot of those ships that, you know, this is a clear end game ship. So that's making it super difficult for me. So I'm just starting to look for things that punch hard and punch often at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. All of those things you guys are talking about. I know for me, when I was looking at lists, I flew a lot of Kylo, right? Flew a lot of Kylo, which goes on to that point where you were talking, Chris, like you wanted that, like, hey, as long as this is my end game piece, everything is fine. But also wrapped in with that, I really like auto thrusters, right? Defensive modifiers, which Will was talking about. Just being able to stack defense and make sure your ship doesn't die is something that people were constantly chasing. And that leads into our second bullet point here, is just the common denominator across most of the successful lists that we saw out there are things that, just had ridiculous defense. It was really hard to hit them, or they didn't rely on tokens to hit you super hard in the face. What are you guys' thoughts? Somebody jump in.
I think, especially with my playstyle is not very defensive at all. And I normally just try and kill stuff before it kills me. And the most common denominator is obviously, you know, trying to get as much efficiency as you can. But, basically splitting up your list into, say, like two different tiers, where you have your end game piece, which is, you know, that's the preferable one. You want to make it all the way to a 1v1. Then you have basically, I'll say, like your supporting pieces to get it to that end game that are decent early and mid game pieces that don't necessarily have the legs to make it all the way to the end. But for me personally, I just try and kill stuff before it kills me.
Fair.
Yeah, I would say it's a common denominator. In first edition has been something I've been starting to refer to as magic dice, where you don't really need to roll them. You just have enough modifiers that you can just cancel out their attack. Me and Dion played a game of, I had a bunch of Z95s and he had a stealth device suit tier with palp and invade and a focus and all thrusters. And at that point, Dion, you could basically just throw down two evades.
Yep.
So it doesn't really matter what I roll. You can automatically evade it. And that's something that, like, Fat Han, the C-3PO Miranda builds with, like, Lorik, have been developing as well, where I just set down two evades and deal with whatever damage.
Yep. And then when I was flying Soontir, last weekend or weekend before last, it's just like, I can throw down two evades and I have an opportunity to possibly get extra evades on the dice and save those two evades. And just every time just the defensing stacking can get absolutely ridiculous. So now let's, now that things are changing, what should we be trying to achieve in squad building? Because now we know that things like expertise and, Predator exists, but it has to be bullseye only. All these just like bajillion actions. Everybody takes push limit. Everybody can like focus, target lock, and do something else all in the same turn. Like, where does our focus need to go now? Because I know, like, we're so used to having that that action efficiency. I feel like we have action efficiency hangover. Because when on Wednesday nights, when we've been talking about like building a squad, you know, I'm hearing people like, man, I'm trying to find a squad where I don't have to worry about green tokens or where I can get target lock focus every turn. I'm like, I can't, it doesn't exist, or not without Thank working God. Super hard. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing, I think, because a lot of the kind of like what you were just saying, where it's like, well, you brought some Z95s to the table and then Dion brought Soontir. Well, it's like, well, too bad. Soontir just automatically wins this because he can evade everything every time. And the defensive stacking is what really made, I think, the developers throughout the course of first edition bring up, like, just basically, hey, now you have harpoons. You have a fully modified shot every time you, if you have chips and the target lock, you're good to go. And there's almost no way you can, you cannot get four hits. And so then, you know, so, and that was just because of all the defensive stacking of how the evade tokens worked and then how Palpatine worked, how auto thrusters worked. And them removing all of that, I think the focus is really going to be moved over to the actual ship chassis, which it was already semi-important, but I don't think it was as important as it's going to be moving forward. You're really going to want to look at those linked actions. You're really going to want to actually like pay attention to the stat lines of your ships and how the dial actually synergizes with the upgrades that you're putting on it.
Yeah, I am super excited going into second edition. The fact that like just like you said, you know, defensive stacking is gone. Like invincible red dice are just gone. So like looking into squad building for second edition, my first initial gut reaction, and I hope it's everyone else's too, is fly something that's fun, because fun is suddenly viable now. So go do that, because in 2 months, we're going to have a meta and we're going to complain about that meta and we're going to try to weasel our way around that meta. But right now, we are in this glorious moment of happiness and joy. So just it, like, have fun with that.
Stop please. Trying to have fun, Chico. No fun. Not allowed to have fun.
Honeymoon phase.
Two months from now, we're going to kill each other over the meta. But let's enjoy the honeymoon while we can.
All right,
Dion, what do you think?
So like when I've been building squads, and Will and I have started going down, I feel the same track, is that like upgrades don't matter as much as they did in first edition.
They really feel kind of optional.
Yeah, honestly. They really do. And when we've been talking about like a lot of these like unique pilots, some of them you just look at it and you go, huh, I don't think I want to put anything else on there. Because either it's not triggering enough to be worth anything. So for instance, this last Wednesday, we recorded 3 games of second edition, and I just put like all the toys onto Han. I put everything except one of the escape crafts. Right, I filled all the slots. Like, let's just see if I could use this stuff. And I did not have any time. Like, if I wasn't boosting, I had to focus. Like, I had no time to target lock, to like go be cute and like fly on a rock, and I can still shoot on this rock, and it's obstructed for me, but not for you. Like, no, it didn't. I had no time to do it because I was flying in that game against a TIE swarm, which are going to be popular. I'm fairly certain, and you're gonna be action starved, and it'll be interesting to see people's initial reaction, because I think there will be some negativity that from some people when they say like, man, I used to be able to, you know, do a 3 sloop with Rey through a debris, get rid of the stress, expertise rerolls, and have 5 hits. Man, where are my 5 hits? Where are they?
they're a long since thing of the past.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for it. And one thing we did see in those games that we played was that dice variance is going to be a thing. Like, you can do your best to try to mitigate it, but you pay for it anytime it's in there. Anytime anything adds an extra die or an evade or something like that, it's super expensive.
Well, I think moving forward, and you have to really learn how to play the averages, which, you know, obviously there's always going to be outliers, but understanding, you know, what a focus token does for offense and defense, what a target lock does for offense, you know, that kind of stuff is important. And then you have to actually play towards those of like, well, is it better for me to boost out of arc and not get a shot? Or is it better for me to just token up and try and kill, you know, that kind of thing. It's going to be much more important moving forward.
Yep. I will say one pro tip. If your choice is between, like, let's say, assuming that you're not about to take a kill shot, if you had the choice between an extra dice or a focus, and it's assuming it's one shot coming in, take the focus. It's always better.
Yeah,
it's always better every time.
You will, if you roll average, you'll net more hits.
Yeah. So, and defending too, like it work. Focus is in that construct, always better than a single die. So, and one thing that some of the people in the chat are bringing up, which I think is was one of my next points, was that we do need to remove ourselves from this first edition mindset and move over to second edition, because it is completely different. It feels very different, and today is I was telling Will in pre-show that today's episode is a little bit selfish, because going through these lists is also for myself, like just practicing building lists and just trying to set parameters, which is what our patrons did. They gave us some, like, hey, look at this pilot, what do you think, what could you do, and or ship and build from there. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to get started. Any other thoughts before we get into trying to build some ships and lists and things?
Nothing from me.
Nope.
Now let's go.
All right, let's do it. All right, so I got to switch over a couple things here. Go full screen there. And there we go.
And immediately we see a bunch of blue squadron pilots.
There's the meta, everybody. All righty. So let me look at my notes down here. So I think that's actually where we're going to start. We're going to start right here. There was a lot of people. We have Jan, Danger Man, Sabe, and Chris Maka all asked about B-Wings. They're like, what should we do for B-Wings? So let's slap some B-Wings in the squad builder. If you're not familiar, we're using yet another squad builder 2.0. All right, so a blue squadron is 42 points.
That's actually relatively cheap, I think, for 2.0 standards. So it means it's only a 21 point. I guess, did they get a downgrade, or did they get a better point spread from first edition? I can't remember what blue squadrons are.
So, oh, look, we have the technology.
Old blue squadrons, 22. But they traded out a shield for hull, so they're 4-4. And they looks like they kept about the same dial.
Well, they added the one talon rolls.
Yeah, the one talon rolls are pretty cool.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Built in push the limit to get a barrel roll. That's nice.
Because that barrel roll can be really important sometimes.
Oh yeah, especially having those short, like the limited white and blue moves. Mm-hmm. If you need to position yourself in a spot where that de-stressing move can keep you in the fight, I think that's very important.
The B-Wing actually doesn't have any type of, I'll say, like ship ability. It's just the chassis, and then that's it.
Yep, all of them are chassis only. And like, so in first edition, at least in the early days, right, people would go, all right, here we go, 4 B-Wings and a Z-95. And, you know, what else would people put on that? Was it just that naked?
I think it was just that naked.
Until collision detector came out, right?
Right, of course.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that, you're still left with 9 points, which means you can put some ion cannons on there. You can put a missile on the Z. Mm-hmm. You can upgrade the Z to maybe a better...
I'd probably upgrade the Z to a higher...
you get a sheath impede in there?
Let's see. Sheath impede... 30 points. Yes, you can. You can get AP5 with toys or Zeb naked.
I would probably go that route or the ion cannons.
The ion cannons are 5, right?
Yeah. So you'd only be able to get one in there because I think you only had 9 points left. So you could I mean, I guess you could stack out just 4 B-Wings, but I don't think that's enough.
Yeah. I think you need some more meat in there for sure. So I think, just kind of looking at this, I know a lot of people, your initial reaction is going to go to reach for that fire control system.
I think that's a trap.
Right? It's just because you have to have gotten the target lock beforehand, which is the big, I'm not going to say problem with it, but it's just different. It's not what people are used to, but I think
it's you're right. It's a problem because you're looking at a ship that's initiative two. You're not going to be able to get a target lock on that initial joust unless you get lucky with range control.
Mm-hmm. So if we're messing with the, you know, with a cheap B wing, maybe the choice is to go either naked or some type of tech. So like ion cannon would be what I would consider tech. Like you're trying to use the ionization as a tool.
I think honestly, if you just do four of them and then you throw something that's those 32 points in there, I think that what's the lowest gunship?
Ooh, you could put a Hawk in there for 32 points, can't you?
Hawk.
I would much rather have three of them and then something that's really good and tricksy.
Really beefy.
Your end game ship that you were talking about.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you got rid of a B-wing, then you could probably... Could you fit a Falcon in there?
Let's find out. Let's see.
I don't know the point values for Rebel stuff, so...
You cannot. It's just a bit too fast.
74 points left.
Yeah, with three of them naked.
Stack up a really good arc, or...
Definitely not a 2400. I mean, you could do a really beefy Kyle Katarn.
A naked Corrin Horn?
Strong. Miranda fits. Right? Nobody wants to hear that, though.
Don't say that.
This is like my 1.0 brain just went, no!
It's coming back.
Yeah, so I think we're agreeing, though. I mean, what the list would be, we're not entirely sure. But naked, when it comes to the lower initiative ones... you know, you get to the initiative three, that's maybe more of a meta call if a lot of people are initiative two.
Yep.
And something that I'm seeing in the chat right now that I super agree with. They're saying that the main strength of the Rebel faction is the combination of pilot abilities. And I super agree. I'm not a big fan of putting a whole bunch of naked low pilot skill ships together, unless you're doing like a swarm in like Imperials. I think they're really good at that. Mm-hmm. The whole concept of like 4BZ, I never really got into in first edition, and I don't see it being extremely strong in second edition. Like when I'm looking at Rebels, I am always gearing towards those higher pilots with abilities and synergies that are all going to work together.
What would you think about going back to Paul Heaver's Biggs Walks the Dogs? Like throwing a Biggs and maybe another X-Wing with a good ability mixed in with two other B-Wings?
So two generic B-Wings and then two decent X-Wings?
Yeah, two people, maybe even, I think you probably fit Lorik in there too, Biggs and Lorik and two B-Wings, and kind of go back to that, what do they call it, Fairship Rebels?
Fairship
Rebels. Kind of squad building. Do you think that's a viable tactic for a 2.0?
Yeah, if you bring in two blues, a blue squadron X-Wing, and Biggs, You're sitting at 173 points. There's a lot of stuff you can stack on there, but you're missing the superpower that Biggs was at the time that made this list so good. And you'd have to put advanced sensors on both the B-Wings to be, you know, what it was before. So you're sitting at 189. So you got 11 points to do something with the two X-Wings.
So I wanna transition now to the named B-Wing. So we have Braylon Strom and Ten Nub. They're both sitting at 50 points, and essentially you get your pick of your poison here. They both do things when they're stressed, and one gives you rerolls, and one modifies your focus results, right? So Braylon is the one that says if you're stressed, you may reroll up to two of your dice. That's when you're defending or attacking, and Ten Nub gets what's-his-face's Kean Farlander's old.
Rest in peace. I think 10 numb is probably the right choice, personally.
Oh, yeah, it's so much better because you get rid of the stress.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's 58 points with advanced sensors.
I mean, both of those ships are the same number of points, right? They're both 50. Yeah,
they're both 50. So if you have a choice, let's say you can only have one, 10 numbs the right choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would always fly it with an alt art of just him looking sad at a picture of Keelan Farland.
But I think you just run him at 58 points with advanced sensors and call it a day.
All righty. So there we go.
At the end of the list building phase, if you still have points, then you could throw an EPT on him.
I would agree with that.
There you go. Yeah. All right, B-Wing fans. We hit up your B-Wings. We'll move on to, Empire. We had a request to talk about the TIE Punisher. Let's talk about the TIE Punisher.
So good now.
All right.
I personally really like the Punisher.
Feed me.
All righty. So base, we're sitting at 36 points. You know, a lot of people ask, how many can you fit in a list? So you can fit 5 plus 20 points worth of toys.
Why is that always the first question?
I mean, that's what people do, right? Like, how many can you fit?
Spam.
Yeah.
People love spam.
I must be the only person who doesn't.
Trust me, you are not the only person.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, maybe it's like, it's one of those, like, I'm the kind of guy where I know what I like. So if there's something I really like, I'm just going to have more of it. Like, I don't need variety. Just give me more of what I like. I'm a simple man. All right. So the cut list here, Initiative 2 comes in at 36. I honestly haven't taken any looks at this yet. I know that Trajectory Simulator is a thing still in second edition. So that's probably where you start.
Yeah. Yep. I think if you're going to run a Punisher, it probably needs to have bombs on it.
My base cutlass is a 50 point trajectory, barrage rockets, and proton bombs. Just joust whatever. Hope you see a TIE swarm and just fly that thing right at it.
You could take four of those.
You can take four of them. That they made the point jump from the cutlass to the named one so much. I feel like those abilities on the named ones are like, oh, I'm going bombs. Boom, let's go death rain. Or, oh, I'm going missiles. Ah, I got to use red line. But I mean, when you're looking at like six or eight points for a jump to get that ability, it's like, oh, that hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, no. I think if you run multiple Punishers, it's probably a little bit too superfluous, but. If you pair it with its baby brother, the bomber, with barrage rockets, you start getting into some silly stuff.
Oh, I love it. The bomber. I guess, you know what? We'll just clump them together. Well, let's talk about some bomber options and Punishers here. So we talked about, you know, getting some bombs on there. We know that the TIE bomber has the nimble bomber ship ability. If you would drop a device using the one straight template, you can use the banks instead. Actually, it doesn't even say one. It just has the arrow straight. So
yeah, yes. Because I think that almost required, you need to put the skilled bombardier on there. So you can have the difference between a one forward bomb drop or a two bank bomb drop. And basically everything in between.
I already don't like where this is going.
Yeah.
Eat some bombs.
It is relatively cheap. I mean, the generic bomber is so cheap, the Scimitar Squadron.
Oh, yeah.
So just what I was looking at was for 33 points, you could just bring 6 of them with proton bombs. That's outrageous. But if you put in a skilled bombardier and say even just a missile, a homing missile, you're still under 40 points for that Scimitar Squadron.
Yep.
And that's outrageously cheap.
If you're trying to use that skilled bombardier, you could put the protons on there. You're sitting at 35. Combined. Say it again.
Bomblets are 5 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't have any shields, so you can't regenerate.
Yeah, you just go right to proton bomb.
Yep.
Man. These look good.
Those are going to be good. Look out for Scimitar Squadrons because they're. They're going to be everywhere.
I guess one
how do you justify spamming so many of those when you got things like Vader out there that can just fly around and do his thing until he screws up your formation enough that he comes in and picks you apart?
Well, I think like so here's my opinion. There's a lot of people talking big game about Supernatural Vader. And yes, there are going to be some people who are really good at it. Not as many people as they think. Because go ahead.
Oh, I think this falls under the Kylo condition. Of whenever the silencer came out and everyone's like, oh my gosh, I can fly Kylo, it's the best thing ever. There's really only a handful of people that can fly him properly well. And I think that's going to fall under the same thing as Vader, because if you're using Supernatural to boost, you're obviously damaging him. He doesn't have an evade token. And even then without the ability or how far you can move with the barrel rolls now, it's relatively going to be pretty easy to figure out where he's going to be.
Yeah. And Vader is so expensive. He's usually running scared if you have so many ships, because he doesn't want to take damage, right?
Yeah.
But let's going back to the Punisher and the Bomber, you know, thinking about like having mixed arms in this list, I'm straight stealing that from you, D. Yoon. Love you, man. Mixed arms in a squad, you could take... If your focus is you want bombs, right? Having this mix of this Punishers and these Bombers together, where you have the skilled Bombardiers doing crazy stuff out the back and you have the Punisher threatening the trajectory constantly, that could be an interesting mix of ships and options there. You could take two Punishers, two Bombers. You're left with 30 points.
And that sounds like enough for some kind of TIE fighter, right?
Oh yeah.
Or sorry, we're straying away from the singular ship.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, it's exciting, right? Like this is what so many of us, like, let's be honest, guys. If you're in the washroom and you have your phone on you and you have your squad builder open, you stay on the bat, like you sit on the toilet for like 10 minutes longer because you're like tinkering with stuff. Yeah, you're all guilty. I know. Don't lie. All righty. But yeah, so I hope.
I do want to have. I saw your advanced sensors proton torpedo build for Redline. And I was going to naysay it. But I realized that Redline's ability just says. Acquire a target lock?
Yep.
That's not a second action, is it?
Nope.
Wow, that's pretty good. And then
yeah, Redline's gonna be really strong for the points that you get him for.
Yeah, so that's
you could focus target lock stop. That's crazy to me.
And that sits at 61 points?
So fair.
Yeah. Advanced sensors, proton.
You throw a seismic bomb in there, or a proton bomb if you want it, if you got the points. But yeah, it is a baseline. That's super good.
That's really strong. Wow.
It's just that's basically. I mean, in first edition numbers, that's only 30.5 points.
Yep, and we talked about earlier how action efficiency is like not really a thing in second edition. Not as common. Here, right here, you have your opportunity to focus target lock. There you go. Wow, that's awesome. So, yeah, take a look at Redline Michael Doe. He was the one who asked about the Punisher. So we'll jump down to Scum here. Oh, okay, let's... There's so many good options here. And so
why don't we start with Gary?
Don't say those words.
Hey, we'll start with Guri. A bunch of people did ask about Guri, Star Vipers in general. So we're starting out at 62 points on Guri. What do you do, Andrew?
Outmaneuver collision detector, done. If you have the points, advanced sensors.
So we'll go ahead and pull that up here. So that sits you at 73 points. So, yeah, I mean, I know, Andrew, you're a huge fan of the Star Viper. The fact that bank boost or excuse me, bank barrel roll essentially gives you a little bit of a barrel roll and a boost in one. It just seems super good.
It is. Like a lot of, I mean, the barrel roll is really what makes the chassis so good and what allows Star Vipers or Guri now, like in first edition, to actually kind of punch above her weight class. Just because she can just be in places that other ships just can't get a target on. I think with going into second edition, you're going to, you're going to fall into the trap of like, oh, I'm going to put fire control system on her. She's never going to be target locking ever. which is why I think it's a trap. And also I think, I haven't gotten a lot of table time with it, but with the title, I'm not entirely sure if it's actually worth the points yet. Just because it's almost a glorified, shield upgrade because you get the little boost at the end, but you're probably already going to be linking actions anyway. So you're already going to be stressed. So you don't want to, you can't double stress because it won't allow you to do it based on the wording. Mm-hmm. And then she's already expensive. So I don't think you're going to be really utilizing that double mod slot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you've played Star Vipers a bunch. I totally agree with you. I haven't really looked at the Star Viper chassis. 10 points for a two-time red boost.
Mm-hmm. At the end phase. So it's not like an advanced sensors thing. It's like a pre, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Again, I need some table time with it to really determine if it's actually going to be worthwhile or not.
Yeah. I'm not seeing the justification of 10 points there.
Yeah. So basically like if you just want to get it for the shield, might as well just go 2 points cheaper and just put a shield upgrade on her.
Hmm.
Yeah. I always thought that the red boost would be like a weird way to block somebody like for next round. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that actually works in practice though.
Yeah. I think it'll be very, very situational. And you'll have to really, now with her being an I5, there will be times where you probably don't, like if you're using outmaneuver and you're out of arc and you're not going to get shot, there's no reason to link if you're already going to get a focus from her ability at range one. So at that point, then you could maybe say, okay, well, I guess I can do this. But I really think if you go cheaper with her, the better. I know a couple of the guys that I've been talking to that like to run her as well, like Lone Wolf on her. I'm not a Lone Wolf kind of guy. I really think outmaneuver is going to be her main EPT, at least the one that I fly on her.
All right. So we're just going to call it right now, Andrew, the standard Guri build outmaneuver collision detector. We're calling it the standard that sits at 73 points. Looking at some of the lower initiative Star Vipers here, I don't throw this out lightly, but are any of the other Star Vipers going to be worth flying?
I think the Enforcer, I wish that they were an I1 instead of an I2, but I think the Enforcer is going to be a very solid extra little ship that you can throw in there. Just no upgrades, just 46 points and leave it at that. To basically be a pretty solid blocker and something that can have a really solid modification and reposition in the same turn.
There we go. So just taking a couple peeks here. So Shizor has that same ability where he's essentially causing other people damage to save himself.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Shizor. No. Daylan, though, I think if you just put advanced sensors on him, he'll be pretty solid, but the I4 hurts him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, I don't understand why this just wasn't his ability in first edition, because it's just, I know it's not exactly the same. It's actually better because you can just any move and turn him 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. But this just seems, it's a lot less text to essentially get the same idea.
because his ability in first edition it's just a wall of text.
I know for me, like when I'm going through cards like that, I'm like, no, just no, thank you, I'm good. All right, so that's the Star Viper chassis. Very, lots of cool options there. Looking forward to seeing some Guri play there. So let's jump back up to Rebels. And let's hit. All right, here we go. Will, let's talk about some Hawks.
Oh, Hawks?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm on Hawks. We'll start with Jan Norris.
Yep. That was
her
request.
Ability is offensive, and that's what everybody's chasing. It sounds like punching harder. And she does have to have the friendly ship in her arc, and then she gains a stress token to roll an additional die. Now, I don't have a go-to crew member for the Hawks yet. That seems to really synergize with what they're trying to do. I actually think the go-to upgrade is the Moldy Crow for 12 points. She gets a 3-dice primary and also has a 180 arc, so it's easier for that ship that she's boosting to be inside of her arc. And I think beyond that, I've been looking at Hawks basically naked. Like, the 2 mod slots, that's for fun. Bombs, the same thing. Like, that's cute, but is it worth bringing? I don't know. And, yeah, the only thing I would be looking at is, like, a Swarm Tactics Moldy Crow Jan. So you could just boost up a generic up to the I-5, which is really good.
So what other pilots we got? So Jan Ors is that offensive one, which is good, right? Because it's really hard to get extra dice in second edition. So
yeah, that's pretty solid. Yeah, and I think so Rourke is a one I flew all the time in first edition. Has to be a ship in your firing arc, and you can make them initiative 7. And I would say the same thing, like Moldy Crow or nothing.
Yep.
I don't have a standout crew that seems to extremely synergize with what they're doing, except for maybe Jyn Erso on Kyle Kratan. Kyle Kratan can throw a focus token to a friendly in arc. Him mixed with Moldy Crow and Jyn Erso can throw an evade token to a friendly ship. And also lets him, if he already has 2 focus tokens, can take an evade token. As I believe how it should work. Yeah, so I think Moldy Crow, Jyn Erso, and Talent to Taste on pretty much all of the named pilots.
But I would almost argue if you have the points, I would put engine upgrade on these guys. Just because 3 points to change the red boost to a white is pretty good. Especially in situations where with Moldy Crow, you're going to have more focuses than you know what to do with. So you might as well just be boosting into good positions.
Yeah, Chris beat me to it. That engine upgrade is going to be really big. Kind of like William said too, I think the Moldy Crow is almost an auto include if you're bringing a Hawk.
Every time.
It adds so much to the chassis.
Yeah, and just looking at the cost of that engine upgrade, it only being 3 points, translate back to first edition, a point and a half for a white boost.
All day, every day.
So, yeah, I mean, if you have the points in your squad, you know, maybe you you look at that there. And then we have the Rebel Scout, 32 points. To have a rotating arc ship, if you need one, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I think the scout you could just throw out there. Maybe this scout has the bomb because you don't need the pilot skill. But I think it's just out there jamming, right?
Yeah. And if you have the points, you put the title on it. But yeah, I mean, you just throw it out there jamming and just being as disruptive as it possibly can.
Is there any way to make that jam white? Is that a thing?
No. I don't believe so.
No. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I think what we kind of came to a conclusion here is that Hawks, pretty much keep them light. They're really good all on their own. Just for the fact of how cheap they are compared to first edition is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, they definitely costed them appropriately, and they finally gave them, one, a great dial, but then also their action bar is awesome.
What do you want to do on a Hawk? You probably can. Right? All righty. So we'll jump to the Empire now. Let's see. Chico, what do you want to do in the Empire?
Just in general?
No, from the list.
He wants to subjugate plants.
Phantoms. I am interested in seeing where Phantoms are going in 2.0 because I know nothing about them. Let's go.
Okay. TIE Phantom has the built-in Stygium Array. After you decloak, you may perform an evade action. At the start of the end phase, you may spend one evade token to gain one cloak token. So it's kind of this like Stygium Particle Array and Advanced Cloaking Device had a baby, and it's the Stygium Array. Right? I mean, that's what it is, isn't it?
I don't know anything about Phantom, so I have almost no opinion.
Yeah, I mean, so they're sitting at 44 points. I know the very first thing people say is like, hey, what happened to my fourth attack dice? Very few ships have four attack dice in second edition.
Well, it went away with a lot of the point cost of the ship.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, for 44 points, that's a steal, essentially, if you fly it right, especially with the lowest initiative being 3. That's already pretty good.
And the thing I'm more terrified of disappearing is where goes my extra 2 defense dice immediately after I shoot?
Well,
you can't
cloak having that advanced cloaking device scenario is like that was the one thing that made Phantoms like viable in first edition.
Well, they did get an extra hull, which helps. They will have an evade, so you're guaranteed on one shot some type of defensive modification. Maybe it's a pilot. Maybe this is a ship where you consider flying with a force user, not necessarily in its crew slot, but maybe somewhere in your list. So you have some type of modification for that defense. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think again, we're all kind of talking about this. We're still in this 1.0 paradigm, and the Phantom is not going to be the end game ship. I think is what a lot of people aren't used to yet, because you know whenever you say Phantom, obviously the only Phantom that we're talking about is Whisper, and the only Whisper we're talking about is the one that dominated the entire meta for however long until they nerfed it, and so with that, you know, everyone just thinks of a Phantom as like, well, it's the endgame ship, period, because it just takes up so many points. That is not the case anymore. So with that, you need to treat it like it's more of a generic kind of ship, and not this ship that like just needs to be, you know, fully decked out.
Yeah, I just built a decked out Whisper as Lone Wolf collision detector, afterburners, and seventh sister that lets you, if someone gets a stress token near you, you can spend a force charge to give it a jam or tractor instead.
Ooh, that's really good.
Yeah, they K-turn in front of you, then you tractor beam them onto a rock. Good. Could be worse. That's still 81 points, and you still have to fly that, though, like, and not get shot at.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, without getting, like, the advanced cloaking and getting all the extra defense dice, I think this kind of goes for a lot of ships, like even like Guri, where she has a decent amount of defensive modifications with the calculates and then focus at range 1. Even she does not want to be shot at, and especially if you even have lower defense dice already, like you don't want to be shot at all ever. The piloting decisions that are going to have to go behind flying these things, if you're bringing a lot of points into them, is going to be very important.
Maybe with the Phantoms, one of the changes in the flying style is that there's going to be more turns now where you stay cloaked. Like if you're in danger of getting shot, you don't decloak. You stay until you can get in a spot where you're confident that you arc dodged, and now you use your decloak ability, you get in an offensive position and go from there. Because usually, I mean, the candy cane, we've seen it forever, right? With Whisper, two barrel roll over, hard one, get a shot, cloak. I have four dice, Palpatine, all the stuff. I won't take any damage. Do it again. And they're just constantly making this almost like this square box around you. So maybe for Whisper now, and maybe all these Phantoms, you're not going to get, you know, as many shots as what you're used to with a Phantom.
Yeah, I'm just not seeing the archetype that they fit into, because like I almost look at a list of kind of like your group of heroes. You've got your magic user, your damage dealer, and your tank, and I don't see what archetype these guys are fitting into now, because like before they were just the ninja bouncing around you, shooting at you like crazy, never getting hit themselves, and I'm not seeing it.
Well, I mean, obviously the Phantom's the bard here.
Isn't that what hawks are? Phantoms are now imperial hawks.
Yeah, so I mean, I do think that the Phantom is in a bit of an awkward place compared to what we're used to. We'll just have to see. I know that like Echo can do some really crazy things maneuvering, and it'll take an ace pilot to really take advantage of that and make your head spin when you're just trying to figure out where in the world is this ship going to go.
Yeah, do any of you guys think that there's a like a stapled on upgrade, like a required upgrade for Phantoms?
Collision detector. That's what I would say. The reason why is that being able to just go straight over stuff and ignore it if you need to, or even just land on it to make sure that you get out of arc and you still have a shot or something like that. It's pretty important. For 5 points, it's pretty solid.
Yeah, it comes with two charges. So you could K-turn onto a rock, use one charge. You can't decloak off of a rock, but you could use the second charge to coming off of the rock. Is that the general idea with that?
Yes. It's also important to note with collision detector, you actually can't fail barrel rolls onto rocks anymore, or boosts onto them. So if you have to be really careful if you don't have any charges.
Mess yourself up.
Really, you don't fail onto rocks anymore?
No, because it's two two basically different sections of text to where you can boost your barrel roll onto rocks, period. And now you don't have a choice but to go onto the rock.
Oh, for collision detector.
Yeah, for collision detector.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're running collision detector, it's kind of a double-edged sword if you're not very practiced with where you put your ship.
I want to talk about seasoned navigator on a Phantom.
So what does that even do?
But I was just about to read it. So seasoned navigator, after you reveal your dial, you may set your dial to another non-red maneuver of the same speed. While you execute that maneuver, increase its difficulty.
Let's stay on target.
Right.
Stay on target, yeah.
So what's
your go-to change on that then?
I mean, I'm just thinking like increasing the possibility for arc dodging for Whisper.
Okay. Now it does only decrease it. So if you go from say a hard two to just a two bank, and that only decreases to white, you can still barrel roll after that two bank then.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're thinking of being able to react and arc dodge?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that I think. Yeah, that's my thought. It's just, is there any crew here that could help with the, I need to get out of arc and more positional rather than offensive, defensive modifier? Because there's that adage, right? It's like, if I'm not getting shot, it's better than like, oh, I had to get a focus token here. Well, just don't get shot. But of course, you want to make sure you have them.
I would say if you're doing that, you need to bring advanced sensors then to make sure that you're getting those actions if you're changing it to red moves.
Yeah, I think that would be the right call. If you're going to do Seasoned Navigator, might as well just bring advanced sensors and make it really hard to kill you.
There you go. I can go wherever I want. All right, so that's a cool idea. Phantoms. Phantoms explored. All righty. Let's see here. Looking at Scum. We talked about Guri already. All right, let's talk about the Jumpmaster. The Jumpmaster. Let's talk. People want to talk about it. Let's do it. All right. The Jumpmaster. Rest in peace. all right. So base 52 points. Already compared to first edition, more expensive than what it would have been because it would have been 50 points. It's just a straight crossover. And if you haven't noticed, the viewers here, you can see all the red actions. The dial is terrible now. Don't think about turning to the right. It's a bad choice.
Well, it has the dial that we all assumed it was going to have before it was released in first edition. And then they came out and said, nah, green's one way, white the other. And we're like, oh, no.
There you go. Yeah. And just the fact that it's a two-dice fixed turret that you have to take a stress to rotate, I find that absolutely... That's just like, we not only hate you, Jumpmaster, we're also disrespecting you. Like, it's another level there.
Well, the best part about it is it doesn't even have a gunner slot, so you can't even put Agile Gunner onto it.
No.
You're done.
Yeah, I would say for the contracted scouts, you have to bring a torpedo. Like, that's... You're not going to do anything with that two-dice arc ever. And if you bring a torpedo, you can keep the arc to the inside. Do you think that would be the way to go?
I mean, that's a compromise. You get to shoot it twice. And the question is, in the course of a game, can you make those two shots matter? That's what it's going to come down to there.
That just comes down to piloting, I guess. Now, obviously, there's no more glitter stim involved, so you don't get any kind of like free modification that way. There's no gunner slot, as we just said, so you don't get Han crew or Han gunner that you can put on there. For crew, I get if you want to try and get any kind of efficiency, maybe Lando crew, but even then, you can only run it on one. So if you're looking to run multiple of these, it's probably not going to be worth it.
And earlier, when Will and I were talking about the Jumpmaster, he suggested Contraband Cybernetics on this thing because you got a ton of red moves. And
yeah.
I think that's a great idea, Will.
Yeah, I think you need to staple that into there. There's no doubt in the game that you're going to do the three sloop. And if you can three sloop, shoot the proton torpedo, sounds great.
Yeah, Cybernetics is already like... in first edition, it's way undercosted for what it does. I think it's costed appropriately for second edition. It's such a good card.
Now, these are still large base ships, right?
Yeah,
they are.
Yep. Yeah. I'm looking at, three of them, three scouts with proton torpedoes and cybernetic contraband leaves you, 2 points. So I don't think that's going to be very good.
Just a triple scout list.
Yeah, why not?
Because the past.
The past is killed. All right, we're starting anew. All right, if they can work, why not?
I mean, you might as well just spend this last 2 points and put like Tobias Beckett on there just to move a rock. I don't know.
Yeah, take us some
exactly
space.
What I would do.
Just set it to where you can change your channel if you need to.
Yep. And they try to lock down your lane that you're going to approach with or where you think your three bank's going to be or your three sloop. Yeah. I mean, is it going to be great? No. Do you have a lot of health? Yes.
I mean, you still have six proton torpedoes that you can fire off with contraband and cybernetics. So you can essentially force to make sure that you get shots off. So it's not bad. It could be better.
Yeah, there's a couple people here. I just want to make some things clear because people are making some mistakes in the chat. All love, but just so that we're learning. So we cannot put R4 on the Jumpmaster because it's small base only. So no R4 astromech, which decreases your 1s and 2 speeds difficulty. Because then you're just back to the original Jumpmaster-ish, right? I think they saw that one right away. One thing we also talked about for the name Jumpmasters is possibly going with expert handling as an EPT in order to get some of that movement back with the barrel roll. We know that large base barrel roll is really good. Now, it's not as good because of the change to barrel roll, so maybe it doesn't matter as much. But that's just a thought there if you're trying to think about a higher PS Jumpmaster, especially someone like Dengar, who's trying to use his ability, make sure to keep things in arc.
Now do they still have a front arc, or is it just it's literally just a mobile arc? And if you want to shoot your torpedoes without the title, you just have to have your arc facing forward.
So I think my understanding they don't have a forward arc for sure, no forward arc, but I believe you can, for instance, have your turret arc to the left. And because the proton torpedo just requires you have to have them in your front arc to shoot it. You don't have to have the pointer pointed that way.
So if you catch them in the corner where they're in your front arc, but then they're also in your mobile arc, which is the pointing to the side, you could still shoot it. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can do that 180-ish off the corner idea there, which is what, if you're going to be flying a Jumpmaster, you're probably going to want to do that if you're touting around those torpedoes. All righty. So looking at time here, I think we can probably get through one more set, one of each faction. I know we got a ton of requests, but you know, so little time. These are all really awesome. I don't know. Let's see. Will, pick something from Rebels.
Let's talk Luke. Luke's much more interesting because everybody knows Luke, in my opinion. And he is a Force user, which is interesting. We haven't actually talked about a Force user yet. So
we have not.
I say we go that direction.
All right. Take the lead.
All right. Luke starts out at 62 points. And I'm just going to put R2-D2 on him. I don't know if that's the best droid, but it's what I'm putting on him. And
thematic.
Yeah. It's also 3 health, too. And on Luke, whose defensive ability is ridiculous, after you become the defender, before dice are rolled, you can recover a force charge. So he always has a focus modifier. Give him 3 extra health. And I'm not sure what else he would need, though. Is there another go-to upgrade for him? As far as force upgrades.
Supernatural. I think that's the de facto that everyone's throwing on him.
Now, I have a... Chico, I'm going to ask you a rules question. You're here for it. what is the definition of your action bar? If you close your S-foils and you have a boost on your S-foils, is that on your action bar?
Well, what does S-foil say? I'm guessing no.
Well, S-foils, it has that little extra bar with a boost on it.
That would be part of your action bar then.
Yeah, because it's like not...
All of those actions that are added on cards, I assume, are part of the entirety of your action bar.
Okay, so things that say action, colon, something, those are what's not on your action bar.
Right.
Is that the difference?
Right.
Then yeah, I would definitely say supernatural reflexes then, because they both trigger at the same time. The supernatural is before you activate, and S-foils is also before you activate. So you could supernatural boost, open your wings, and then do your maneuver. And that sounds really great.
Not lose a shield or damage yourself.
Exactly.
So R2-D2 Supernatural Reflexes has us sitting at 82 points there.
I mean, that's actually a pretty healthy X-Wing. I mean, you could always, if you really wanted to throw some points around, I guess you could put afterburners on him just to make him more of a pain.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to do as much movement as his daddy, right?
No.
Vader.
No. Well, but I actually think I like his ability better than Vader's, because I think it's going to take a lot of restraint to make sure that you don't spend all of Vader's dice modification just to action yourself away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. So taking a look at that, I mean, I really like that, the Supernatural R2-D2 S-Foils. It's a good base Luke.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think then you could run him, maybe even do the Trench Run Trio, do Wes Biggs, Luke. I think you can, I'm pretty sure you can fit that.
Let's try. Let's see.
While you're trying that, I will let you know on page 3 under actions, bullet 2, some upgrade cards have an action bar that lists one or more actions. These actions are added to the ship's action bar and therefore are standard actions that the ship can perform. Boom. There you go.
Awesome. So it does work.
Oh, that's super good then. All right. Supernatural it is for sure.
Yep.
Supernatural, super good.
Yeah, that's crazy. Boost, open your wings, Talon roll. Ugh.
Yeah.
Eat your heart out, Vader.
and you almost get infinite free focus mods.
Yeah. And wow, that's really good. All right. Here comes the Lukes, guys. All right. So, yeah, you can fit Wedge and Biggs in there. You're left with 18 points with that Super Luke to play around with.
That sounds like a pair of torpedoes.
Yep. That sounds like some torpedoes or maybe some cheap astromechs if you don't want to run the Alpha Strike stuff.
Yeah, Proton but is 9.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually probably better just to run 2 protons.
Yeah, you could just kill something. Whatever your outpilot skill, and you just kill them, so you don't need a bid.
Yep.
I think one thing that I've seen people chasing a little bit with Wedge, which I'm not a super fan of, is outmaneuver on Wedge.
No, I don't.
Because he's not going to be arc dodging that often. Like I don't think he's going to be in spots where he's going to be not in the opponent's arc. It sounds cool, but I don't think it's going to happen that much.
People were doing that in first edition because they could put flight assist on him, and that got him enough arc dodginess to get outmaneuver.
Yeah, X-Wings are definitely not knife fighters. They are straight jousters through and through.
Alrighty, so that's some X-Wing love there. Chris, go ahead and pick something out of the Empire.
Oh, you're doing it to me again. Yeah. I'm not an Empire player. I don't like any of those options. Somebody else pick it.
Soontir, let's talk about Soontir Fell.
Okay. Soontir Fell. We'll talk about the Interceptor in general. How about that? We'll
talk about the squint.
Because we have a couple of requests for that. So, Interceptor, let's pull it up here on the squad builder. Soontir Fell sits at 52 points. Our lowest one, the Alpha Squadron, is at 34. So the first question we had with Interceptors was somebody's like, hey, will there be any good Interceptor swarms? I don't know. So you can fit 5 of the initiative ones. Let me say this. If you want to try it, do not fly this like a TIE swarm. I think that would
It'll
be the
be
wrong
really
choice.
Fun.
Yeah, I think you have to, you take them and you have to like essentially make a net, right? You come at it at all angles and then you're just, you're constantly cycling. You're going to take damage on one. You got to get it out. And I think that's probably the way to go. What do you guys think? TIE Interceptor Swarm.
Yeah, actually, that leaves 30 points for Wampa, who's a discount TIE Interceptor. And that's six ships with three attack dice, essentially. That's pretty good. Yeah. Most of them can double, or at least single, reposition and focus.
Yeah, I'll definitely say if you're running five interceptors and a TIE fighter, that's actually gonna be really fun to fly, just regardless of the outcome of the game. Just because there's so many different ways you can fly them, and yeah, those three dice attacks are no joke. Like, they can definitely even with just a focus, they'll hit.
Yeah, I think that the only trouble you have here is because they are initiative one, they're gonna get initiative killed. It's gonna happen to you as you're going.
Absolutely. Well, you know, they do only have three health, and that's, I think that's what's gonna hold them back. In general, is just the fact that their defensive profile has gotten smaller, but their health has stayed the same. And even though everyone else's attacks have gotten a little bit less modification, attack dice are still weighted to hit more often than you're supposed to evade them.
There you go. And looking at Soon Tier, so Soon Tier's ability, let me get rid of these extra ships here, cluttering up the screen. Soon Tier's ability, at the start of the engagement phase, if the enemy is in your bullseye, gain a focus token. All right, so I mean, that's obviously, I mean, being able to get extra tokens is really good. You're going to want to use the auto thrusters to get you in the spots you got to get. What else? I mean, do you even need any upgrades on Sudrafel?
Maybe outmaneuver. I'm not sure, honestly. Shield upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, something to protect them could be good.
Juke, maybe. You know, it's, I don't fly interceptors, so I don't fly things that just run away for an entire game very well. Mainly just because I don't have the patience for it.
I would almost do Debris Gambit. As you're bouncing around those asteroids, getting an evade and still being able to do other things.
Yeah, but they already have a white evade, though.
Oh, yeah. So it doesn't really add anything.
Yeah, never mind.
You were thinking about the first edition Debris Gambit. Maybe Afterburners is a right choice. I said it accidentally when I was speaking. Mm-hmm. But being able to do that 3-5 boost even while stressed can, especially with a 3 health ship, could save your bacon.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at Lone Wolf Shield Afterburners. And Afterburners is interesting there because you can boost focus, or excuse me, you could boost evade, red bear roll, line up the bullseye, and get a focus. So you still end up with four actions. And Lone Wolf modifier. If you're chasing modifiers, I think that would be the way to go.
The other idea here is you take Predator on Soon Tier because the goal is you're always trying to get that bullseye off. I think the question is, as a pilot, are you? And I think that's something with practice. You got to figure it out. And can I get that bullseye on continuously? Because while it is 2 points only, I think it has diminishing returns if you can't use it. Like, you still have the opportunity cost of actually using something in the slot when you maybe could have had something better.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going Predator, you might end up less arc dodging and just more initiative killing things because you can boost bear roll into that range one, get the Predator and a focus, and then just shoot something with four dice double modded initiative six. I think that would be the cheap way to go with them.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's interceptors. We have somebody in the chat begging for strikers. Okay, this is our last Imperial. We'll take a quick peek at the striker. Like, please.
Strikers are interesting because they have a bomb slot now.
They do.
And a gunner slot.
Thank you, Pablo Hidalgo. If that's the guy who like does all the canon stuff for Star Wars. And in
he listens. Oh, thanks for listening.
In the vehicles book for Rogue One, Fantasy Flight released this, and I think it was like maybe a week later that book came out for the vehicles, and you turn to the TIE Striker page, and the first thing you see is there's a second person in the back who launches bombs. It's the very first thing you see. You're like, oh, man. So I think the thing that makes it the most interesting is the fact that you have the adaptive ailerons and the bombs. Like, mind you can't, like, ailerons drop a bomb. Like, that's not a thing. But you could potentially use it for the mines, right? Ailerons do a move, and you've dropped the mine behind you. Oh, wait, no, you can't do that anymore.
You still drop mines in system.
It's still a system phase. Never mind. That doesn't work either.
Unless it's an action bomb. It's not an action bomb, is it?
No, it's all in the... Lies. I lied. I lied to the internet.
So looking at a cheap one, a cheap bomber, striker, with planetary sentinel, 34 points, skilled bombardier, and proton bombs is 41 points for 3 attack dice and 2 proton bombs. Is that worth it?
It could be.
I think what it does there, it makes it really scary to chase a striker, especially with the speed. If they're kind of doing the boom and zoom, right? You come in, you hit with your 3 attack, and you try to get out, especially if you have multiple of these. Having that bomb out the back definitely makes it scarier.
Yeah. Wow, you could actually run 4 of them like that and then a scimitar like that as well.
You could, or if you drop the skilled bombardier, you could just take a 5th one with protons, and then you have 5 points left over to play with, or adding something like a bomber. Just something, just a quick side tangent I want to do. Every time we've looked at these pilots, I'm noticing that a lot of times we're kind of skipping over that mid initiative pilot, because I think we're looking for either point efficiency, like you take the cheapest thing you can and you use its tools, or you're looking at those pilot abilities. What do you guys think? The developers talked about, like, oh, we wanted to shrink the initiative because we noticed that the mid-tier pilot skills didn't really get used, so we're making it 1 through 6. Are we going to have the same thing? Just the numbers are squished now? What do you guys think?
I don't think so. I think that there's enough overlap with good point costs and abilities and stuff like that. There will be some use for ships at I'll say 1, 3, and 5. 4, I think, may or may not see a lot of play, and 2 is just kind of eh.
Cool.
I think if you're looking at the possibilities, like on the TIE Striker here, you've got a guy at PS1, 3, and then you have your named people. People are going to min-max. You're either going for something big, or you're dropping to the bottom. I don't think you're going to see a lot of those middle tier guys, unless there's something very specific on a list that needs it. I mean, it's just going to be like in second edition. You don't see the middle tier stuff unless it's specific. Like, you know, you only saw daggers with, you know, Biggs Walks the Dogs. You only saw, you know, the those middle things. They so rarely pop up. I don't think that'll change at all.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that if it's a meta call. Like, if everybody is a 3, or if, like, you know, the main list have initiative 3s in them, you might need to bump up your pilot skill 1s to 3 just to compete against the other threes. But I don't think it, in just pure list building, I don't think it's a necessity. I think you just go low or high.
Let's take a second to talk about the striker name pilots. Essentially, they all have the same ability, right? Nothing has changed.
Duchess can use her ailerons while stressed.
Okay, buff. Mm-hmm. So,
and she's the cheapest one at I5.
40.
So she's much better.
I'm just trying to, you know, of course, we're always trying to find what's the best thing to fit on here. I mean, adaptive ailerons is such a good tool. It makes them really unpredictable. Is there a standout? Let's say you're not trying to go with bombs. You're trying to keep them cheap. Do you just run them naked?
I would say juke, of all things, or outmaneuver.
Outmaneuver could be good on them.
Say that again, Chris.
They're just so darn fast. You know, you put outmaneuver on there, and either everybody has to respect that ship that's flanking faster than you can handle, or they have to, you know, continue on to whatever the rest of your list is that's going to pound you from the front. So if you can properly flank with that ship, you know, you do like pure Sabacc without maneuver.
Yep, I just put that on the screen.
Yeah, I'm looking at my own. So yeah, that right there, that is a fairly cheap but powerful flanker that is going to force somebody to go, oh hell, who do I turn into? Do I go after the people who are jousting me, or do I go after this flanker that's going to rip me to shreds if I don't respect it?
Because he's coming. I'm coming. Yeah. What you going to do about it? And just, you know, to take a second to talk about pure Sabacc, I mean, his ability is really good. There's a lot of limit on getting extra dice, and there's a guy who can throw four attack dice natively until he takes damage. So that's really
good. Oh, my God. I just saw something. You can put afterburners on these things.
Huh.
That thing is going fast.
It just like clears the entire board in one turn.
Yeah, I mean, one bank, three bank, one bank boost, barrel roll. Yeah, they're behind you. There's nothing you can do about that.
Hi, I'm here. There you go. I actually think that is both hilarious and not bad. So you could take Sabacc with afterburners for 52 points.
Not bad.
No, that's not bad at all. And maybe for Sabacc, you might consider a hull or a... No, you wouldn't want hull. You would want a shield upgrade, right?
A shield upgrade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
To protect them a little bit. All right, Andrew, I'll let you close us out here by picking our last scum from our list here.
Okay, let's see here. I'm going to go with, I think the obvious choices here are going to be like, you know, Protectorate or the Falcon. No, we're going to go G1A Forlom.
Ah, good choice, good choice. All right, let's go ahead and pulled up here. So G1A is a medium base now, if you didn't know. Now you know.
I am really excited for this ship. The Mist Hunter is one of my favorites.
Yeah, and I'm just excited to see the dial. Like, there's so much red on there, but there's a lot of options.
Yeah. The having the stop is really big, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, unload some knowledge on us for the ooh, G1A. Man. What are you seeing?
Okay, so I've been toying around with a Falcon list, which I will not disclose, but
no, that's fine.
It definitely has the G1A in there, and it has Forlom just because I love his ability so much. Honestly, like, I think that really the only auto include card is 000. Everything else is kind of pretty pretty open up to how you want your list to fly. A good one that I've seen for the talent is Debris Gambit, because it gives you the evade, and it lets you forcefully give yourself stress if you need it to toss it off to someone else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just the purposeful like passing of stress and giving your opponent stress is a very rare mechanic that that used to be all over the place in first edition. Second edition, much more rare. And I think it's going to be really good. And Andrew, I think I know where you're going. I think I know where you're going with your idea. I don't want to take it apart, but I got you, fam. I got
you. I'll be talking about this tomorrow night on Wednesday for the Birmingham Barons podcast.
That's right. There you go. So to be continued. To be continued on the Birmingham Barons. So just looking at the chassis, I do like that they gave him multiple K turns. You got the four and the two. That's awesome.
I think another solid choice is if you have the points, Contraband Cybernetics. We've already said it's really good.
Oh, it's so good.
It's just going to be even better on him just because you can pass off some of that extra stress. And you can with Cybernetics, you can actually, this is where you can get your Calculate token and then possibly target lock something in the same turn, because you still completed a red maneuver. And then you get your normal action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Will.
What's your thoughts on the Mist Hunter title? It adds for 2 points. It adds a cannon. Is there a go-to cannon on this platform?
I think HLC is going to be too hard to line up with the medium base. I don't think the barrel roll is enough.
It doesn't give out barrel roll anymore.
Oh, it does?
Cannon.
Okay, I guess they have it misprinted on the ones that they gave out for the system open in KublaCon. Because mine actually has the barrel roll like little icon on it.
Oh. Huh. We can do a double check here.
You know what?
It's possible that Yasip doesn't have the action added onto it.
Okay.
People of the internets, go double check the changes.
Yeah.
you know what to look at. I don't have it up right now.
I agree. It doesn't say, but it's just this list builder. But as far as the cannons, do you think spending 5 points for a tractor beam or 7 points for an ion cannon is worth it on these platforms?
I don't think so. Because like at the end of the day, it's still only a 9 health ship that has 1 agility. It's gonna die. I think trying to run them and utilizing and trying to leverage as much of their pilot abilities as you can before they go, instead of trying to stack them up and make them into this mainstay control piece. The tractor beam is nice, but I don't think it's necessarily required. I mean, you can get a tractor beam that's way more effective for 28 points in the Gunrunner.
Yep, I agree. So yeah, so when we went through a ton of options there. Let me go ahead and switch out this screen. There it is. All right, yeah. So we covered a lot. So thank you to everybody who put in suggestions on the Patreon. That was tons of fun. I definitely think we're gonna do this again, because I know I really enjoyed it. I feel like we unpacked a lot of different options and possibilities. Just being able to go through these ships and just talk about it with people who have different ideas, because I feel like all four of us have, you know, bring different things as X-Wing players that we're good at and what we see. So that's just super fun to do. Any closing thoughts from any of you guys on just list building in general for second edition, or just throw it out there, bits of knowledge, whatever you got?
I'll throw out there that the Mist Hunter upgrade card does have a barrel roll, and it's not listed in the errata of the rules reference, so it must get the barrel roll.
Cool.
That's all I got.
I'm gonna click it right now. I'm gonna submit a a bug request. Yep.
While Dion's doing that, I think kind of what we started saying at the beginning, before we started going in through all the different ships and stuff, I think it's important to try and get out of that 1.0 paradigm by looking at these ships and saying, oh, this has an EPT, I have to put an EPT on it. A lot of these upgrade slots honestly feel very optional. I think at least at the beginning, when we're going through this honeymoon phase of having all these extra ships and new things that we're learning and everything like that, I think it's important to, one, fly what you want to fly and fly the ships that you want to fly, but then also try and get as many on the board as possible, especially if we're kind of what everyone is predicting is we're going to see a lot of TIE swarms. So the more ships that you can spread out the damage on, possibly the better.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that the era of 2 and 3 ship builds is done. And I think that you're going to see the 4, 5, and 6 ships dominate from here on out.
Which transition here, it'll be interesting to see how having more ships are going to affect turn count, which is something we talked about a lot in first edition. I did that whole research project, all that. So because it takes a lot more time to move more ships. You're thinking about more ships. Are our length of game going to shorten, get longer? Things are going to die, though, now in first edition. So maybe that once you hit that slope, things will progress a little bit faster. Just all exciting things to think about. I want to say thank you to everybody who took the time to watch tonight and to listen in the future. You guys are awesome. And we have to talk about what have we done with those plans. We're here. Lord Vader, this is what we've done with the plans. The Minock Open's coming up. We are the official streamer for the Minock Open. Registration is open. It's happening November 3rd in Burbank, California. And be there or be square. All right. September 15th. They want you guys to sign up by September 15th so that you guys can get like the coins and the card binder, all that stuff that they're doing. And then September 22nd, Gold Squadron Classic, get signed up now so that you could. Actually, I did see while we were casting, there was at least one person who signed up during the cast. Yep. I see it right here. Let me just double check if it was that or something else. Loading. Face ID. Is it you, Dion? Yep. That's exactly what it was for. So sign up. He's in the raffle. Do you want to be in the raffle for this sweet, sweet Lando? Do it now. Before I do the whole ending spiel, Chris, thank you so much for hopping on.
Yeah, definitely. Always glad to be on.
And Andrew, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really take the time to introduce Andrew. He just kind of snuck in. This is Andrew Knuckles of the Birmingham Barons podcast. Also, Andrew Knuckles of the Curled Paw Creative, sponsor of the Gold Squadron podcast a bajillion times. So,
greetings.
He's also known as Big Acrylic, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I'm super excited to unveil once we get them, cut and all that stuff. Those sweet, sweet templates.
Oh no, the templates look awesome. We finished, the design process today, and I'm really sad that these are limited edition because I can't get one.
Why don't you just come to the Gold Squadron Classic?
Oh man, if September wasn't the end of all things for me, then I would.
Oh no, we're losing Andrew. they'll be back around. We're going to be doing a variation on these templates for our as just Gold Squadron templates, because I was telling the guys this earlier, Andrew. You know, it did take me I know that there was a lot of issues with the file, but it took me 3 weeks to do that. And I was like, I can't do that again. I'm too
welcome to being a designer.
Yep. Yeah, and I have like zero art skills. It was just a lot of patience. But yeah, thank you for cleaning that up. They're gonna be super awesome. I spoiled them to like our local group, and they were pretty pumped about it. So
awesome.
So you can watch live X-Wing events and content at twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. Remember to renew that Twitch Prime subscription every 30 days. It's literally free money. Our next broadcast will be at the Nova Open. Not this Friday, but the 31st. Before I go too far, Will, you sound really, really good.
A really, really nice person got me a really nice microphone, and I appreciate them very much.
Yeah, thank you, patrons, because that's you guys. We were able to upgrade Will's sound. I know we had some – it kind of sounded like ocean waves, right? We kind of would come in like – it was kind of weird. But, yeah, it's all fixed up. Sounds super good now. So thank you, guys. Patrons, I'm going to get to your guys' spiel in a minute. I had to mention it because I had forgotten to say it. You can watch our X-Wing videos and replays of our streams on our YouTube channel. Look up Gold Squadron Podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. Hit it. It helps so people can watch all the awesome stuff we've been putting up. And lastly, if you enjoy all of our content that we bring, you can help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag by going to patreon.com/GoldSquadron. Thank you to everybody who's taken the time and money to do that. You guys are fantastic. And special thanks to Tommy Adams and William Anderson for becoming patrons this week. You guys are fantastic. So again, thank you, everybody who watched. Any closing thoughts or anything you want to say to the people before I let you go?
Not too much for me, except, you know, thanks for being an awesome part of the community. We couldn't do all the cool stuff that we get to do without you guys.
Listen to the Birmingham Barons and Chico.
I don't have anything to say you'll let me say.
This is your chance.
CryoDex is the best. Go listen to OCX.
Fantastic. Any closing words, Will?
No, I'm really excited for this. Has been donned the honeymooning era of just getting some fun games out on the table.
Fantastic. So we'll be
3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah. 3 weeks for real. This upcoming Wednesday, we will be streaming from Pastimes, from our league night. We'll be putting six different squads on the table, over three games. So that'll be tons of fun. Join us there. We'll be starting around 4:30, 5 o'clock. It just depends when people get there. So for William, Andrew, and Chris, my name's Dio Morales. Gold Squadron, out.